Music from Peter, Paul, and Mary, If I Had a Hammer. Also, we heard Faith Walking People from A.B. Grant just before that. Good morning to you. It is 11 minutes past the hour, past 8 o'clock here in our central time zone. And David Allen Putt and I are traversing the broken road this morning. Joining us now for a walk, Dr. Don Clark from Garden View, Texas. Don, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm just alive and well here, except for the few snowflakes that fell last night. It's this time of the year. You can call it cabin fever, I see. Have you ever had cabin fever, Don?
Yes. When I lived in Seattle last year. I mean, it didn't get sunny until July.
Oh, that would be tough. Serious vitamin D deficiency, I can tell.
Yes, you have to take vitamin D or else you're looking for a shotgun.
Well, I lived in Portland for probably 5-6 months and over the wintertime. And it was just, people would go home and say, I think I saw the sun for about 42 seconds today.
Ooh, a timer. Eh? Don, was depression prevalent in Seattle because of that?
Oh, yes, I think so. I think it's rated as one of the top cities in depression.
And I've noted a number of people who lived in Alaska, too, and I'm wondering about that 6 months of semi-darkness there, too.
Yeah, that would be tough.
Tough to contend
with. That would definitely be tough.
Well, Don is a biochemist, and he's a board member with Creation Moments, and we're just delighted to have you with us, Don. And we've got one lined up for you today to discuss. I'm going to let.
Yeah, David is laughing.
Well, yeah, he
Boy,
was.
It must be a doozy.
He did the news story last week.
Lined up.
Yeah, and he's been in the news off and on for what, since 1991? Was that when OTSI was discovered, David?
He was found in 1991. Yeah, and he's a caveman who was discovered half buried in ice, from his lower. Or his upper two-thirds were buried or encased in ice, so he was preserved. Supposedly, he's 5,300 years old. He died when he was 45. I don't know if you can be able to see this picture, Don, but this would be what this was his photo ID.
Aha. Uh-huh. That was on his driver's license at the time.
That was on his driver's license, okay. Yeah. Is Don still left? Oh, okay, there he is. Okay. And I don't know if that's really his true, but that's the reconstruction that scientists have put together. The latest news that there was about this particular find, and there's been a number of stories about it, suggesting he did this and that based on his the things around him. He had ibex or clothing made out of ibex, or there was bits and pieces of that. He was wearing some sort of a hat made out of a plant material, and in an upper garment made out of it wasn't woven, but I think it was animal skins as well. The latest thing was that the news story was last week was that they've completed studying his DNA, or have mapped out his nuclear genome, and they now discovered that they're suggesting that he had brown eyes, he had O blood type, and he was lactose intolerant. And he was predisposed to heart disease. And is this all hype and malarkey, or is there some possibility that this might be accurate, Don?
Yes, you can. You can, through your DNA, you can type your DNA, obviously, to get to your phenotype, which would be, eye color and hair color and different things like that. But you can, these days now, you can also determine certain types of disease, or at least a predisposition. I would call it a predisposition, as opposed to did he actually have, those diseases. You'd have to do an autopsy to really find out. But you can be predisposed based on your, genetic composition. It does not, like I said, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have the disease, but you are predisposed to it.
Yeah, and then now that I read closely, he was, he said he was lactose intolerant. So, I mean, maybe that was the predisposition to be lactose intolerant?
Well, they may have found a gene that is a marker for lactose intolerance.
Okay. And the predisposition for heart disease as well.
Yes, right.
Yeah, and in this in examining this mummy, they've discovered what he had for his last meal and how he died. I guess he had an arrow wound in his shoulder that they said would have been fatal, even if modern medicine had been available to him. They talk about how he died and what he wore and now his DNA. Other than just being interesting, how is this significant?
Well, I think it's significant from another number of points. One, I mean, his age. If the carbon, this dating is done by carbon dating, carbon-14 dating, and if that dating is accurate, and there's some questions as to how accurate it is that far back, then we have an understanding of man actually being much more intelligent than evolution would have said, let's say. So, I mean, the fact that he had copper tools, he had, a copper axe, he had arrows, he had a couple of arrows, in his bag, from what I read, that were completely finished, and then he had several that he apparently was working on. That were exactly like the one that was stuck in his shoulder. So whoever he got into a fight with, or maybe he shot himself, I don't know.
In the back with a bow and arrow, that'd be a trick.
He shot an arrow in the air and wondered when it would come down.
And those patented boomerang arrows, yeah.
So it's, he's interesting from a number of standpoints, but I think the most interesting standpoint is that it shows sign of intelligence back then. Mm-hmm. And creationists would say that we are devolving instead of, evolving in that Adam was the smartest man on earth, of course, besides Jesus.
I'd never heard that, Don, that we're devolving. That's interesting, because modern music would tend to support that theory.
Yeah, exactly.
In modern literature.
I went to a, my family took me to a Blue Man Group concert. I don't know if you've ever heard
the Blue Man, those advertising guys, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, these are three guys that are, they're all blue, at least their face and their hands, and of course they wear suits. Mm-hmm. They give you the impression that they're from another planet or from outer space. Mm-hmm. But yes, some of the music, you would say, this is not Beethoven.
This is the devolution is what it is.
Yeah.
But they put the devil in devolution. and in fact, that's always been kind of a pet peeve, because I grew up with the assumption that somehow our ancestors were not as bright as we are. And I found myself in recent years rebelling against that whole notion, because seeing what they did and how they survived and what they left us with to move on with is pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, now they didn't have computers like we have today and all this electronic stuff.
Yeah, nor did they need them.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but they were much more intelligent than we're led to believe by the evolutionary theory.
You know, Thomas Merton, the monk of the early 20th century, in a writing that I was exposed to recently over on internetmonk.com, was talking about before we become gods, we have to become men. And he was referring to knowing the earth and being closer to the earth and the cycles of things that happen, and basically understanding at a gut level the glory of God's design before we can even begin to comprehend what it's like to be immortal. Would you concur?
Oh, I would think so. I mean, it says, the God's glory fills the heavens and the earth. So his glory is present, and if we don't take time to look at it, how can we even begin to comprehend who God is? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the saddest things of modern day, especially modern day cities, is that you can't see the stars.
That's true. That's an excellent
point. At night. Yeah. And there's so much light pollution from our cities that... you might see the major, very, very brightest stars, Betelgeuse and some of the other ones, but you're not you're not seeing the millions and you know mm-hmm. of stars that are out there, and you're certainly not seeing the Milky Way. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a modern problem, because you know, before electricity and before the light bulb, man could walk outside on a clear night and see billions of stars, millions of stars. And we can't do that today unless we go way out in the, you know, in the country.
And light pollution has become a factor in urban design, at least in some circles these days. So at least we're paying attention to that. If we can beat the problem, I don't know, but I agree with you. It's a major issue. So I would suggest was the invention of agriculture. And David and I have talked about this briefly. And part of this stems from my reading of the book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, Dara Diamond's prize-winning book on how cultures survive and societies have survived. And it was his position, and I've heard from other quarters too, that when agriculture developed and allowed us to specialize, that is, rather than the hunting and gathering and finding our food day by day just enough to subsist, it made it possible for us to specialize, because some people raised food, others became tool makers, others became soldiers, warriors. And also, agriculture introduced a lot of diseases to us that we had not known before. Is that accurate?
Well, agriculture was with us from the very beginning, obviously. I mean, if you look at even, you know, Genesis 2, God, in Genesis 1, God placed Adam and Eve in the garden mm-hmm. to tend the garden. So that's agriculture. Mm-hmm. And they ate of the fruit. And then after the fall in Genesis 3, God cursed the ground, and he said that through the sweat of the brow you shall eat. So there was toil now that man had to work hard in order to get his food. And so agriculture was with us from the very, very beginning.
But could part of that curse have been those diseases? I'm sorry, but could part of God's curse on the ground have been those diseases? I mean, that's pure speculation,
well,
I suppose.
Part of the curse was diseases that mm-hmm. that came, you know, so
subjecting us to death. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So man had to then you know, live. So again, you know, it goes back to what is your perspective? Where do you start from? Are you coming from the bottom up and just looking at the evidence and saying, well, gee, man evolved. And as a part of the evolutionary process, he developed agriculture. Or if you look at the Bible would say agriculture was with us from the very beginning. Hunting became part after the flood, because man was a vegetarians before the flood. Mm-hmm. But God allowed Noah and his family to eat protein from animals after the flood.
When was the flood? In fact, this might relate to Otzi a little bit. If in fact he is 5,300 years old, that puts him 1,300 years older than, say, Abram was, or Abraham. Where does he, in the timeline, where does he fit with respect to the flood?
Well, if you know, day zero was when Adam, or you know, God started creating the heavens and the earth, the flood was about a little over 1,600, you know, years from day zero. If you were, you know, assuming a 6,000-year-old mm-hmm. Earth, so he would have been, I mean, you know, in close to the flood, if that date is correct. So let's talk about that date and how accurate, you know, it might
I was going to ask you, carbon dating, how is it done, and how accurate is it?
Well, again, you look at the degradation products of carbon-14, and then you compare the ratios of carbon-14 to its degradation products, and you say, okay, because we have so much of each, then we can go back and say, how long ago was the carbon fixed in the organic tissue that was analyzed. Now, they calibrate carbon-14 dating with tree rings. So they assume that each ring is a year. Mm-hmm. And if you look around today, that's a pretty accurate assumption. But all bets are off after the flood, because the flood had such a dramatic change on our environment, and things were changing so quickly that you could have had multiple tree rings being formed in 1 year. Because the seasons were going back and forth. Mm-hmm. It would get warm and then it would get cold. It would get warm and get cold. And we know that tree rings are formed because you have a dormant period, and then you have the summer and things are warm and the tree actually grows. So if you're going through multiple seasons in a year, then you can't really use that, especially the farther back you go in the time period or after the flood, let's say 700 years or so, after the flood, things are going to be changing so much here on Earth that it's not accurate to say that one ring equals 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So he was probably younger than the 5,400 years as claimed. Actually, in their own data, the group that did the carbon-14 study, they say he was between 3,100 to 3,300 plus BC. That's their range of dates, even with their own carbon-14 dating. And if you look at the correction, you'll see there's quite a fluctuation in the calibration curve, that is in the tree ring curve, where at some points in time it's flat, and then at other points in time it's steeper slope, and so even the tree ring dating is not a nice linear relationship between number of rings and an actual date, so to speak.
Well, how would they carbon date? And I'm making an assumption here, maybe it's faulty, that if they have tissue from a certain geographical area that they're trying to date with carbon dating, they must also have trees from that area. Otherwise, there would be a difference in those growth rings. And how do you date something that was found in an area where there weren't trees, if you're in the desert or in the sea bottom or some such place?
Well, I mean, they're not necessarily using the trees from that area. They're using old trees, that mm-hmm. you can go back, and if you count the rings, you can go back 4,000, 5,000 years. or you're using several different trees, because you might have, a sample of tree to say, okay, this tree was around at the time of Christ, and mm-hmm. it had so many rings, and so before that time, if it had 1,000 rings, then it was 1,000 years before Christ when the tree actually lived. So they don't just take trees from the area. Actually, the tree ring calibration is kind of like a universal calibration these days.
Kind of a shaky standard, it sounds like.
I beg your pardon?
Kind of a shaky standard, it sounds like.
It's it's the best that the scientists can do. Mm-hmm. With this type of data. And like I said, ordinarily, it's not a bad assumption to look around you and say, what's happening now? But the further back you go in time, the worse that assumption is, because you're assuming that things are constant. Mm-hmm. And as we discussed with the other isotopes, the uranium degradation and everything that... for dating the Earth, if things are not constant, you have a difficult time of actually saying anything. Mm-hmm. So now, I believe Atzi is old. He is an old find. His exact date, is in question. I would say he's after the flood. Is he before Abraham? I don't think we can actually say. He may be.
Mm-hmm.
But he's he could be, you know, post-flood. Now, it would be interesting if one could really determine if he was really pre-flood. But he would have degraded if he was pre-flood, because the pre-flood conditions were much milder temperatures, as evidenced from vegetation in the very far north. So the flood really changed the temperature conditions, you know, around the earth quite a bit.
And again, you're saying the flood, you think, was about 1,600 years into the timeline from day zero.
That's correct. It's been a while since I've looked at it, but I think between 1,300 and 1,600 years.
Okay.
from day zero, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So, if I'm following your logic, then he was frozen in ice, and that's why his body has been as preserved as it is. So it must have come after the flood. I guess the other question is it possible that the flood didn't reach his particular location, or the water went over the top and the ice didn't melt?
Yeah, no, it's if you read scripture, it was a global flood, so every part of the earth was covered with water. The mountains are actually a result of tectonic plate movement, and they, scripture says that the oceans sank, the ocean bottom sank, and the mountains came up. And that's what caused the draining of the floodwaters. So the earth was much much more uniform prior to the flood than post-flood.
Hmm. So by that reasoning, then he would be post-flood.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe he was.
Is there consensus in the scientific community for an approximate date of the flood, or even that there was a global occurrence of a flood?
I don't know. In the scientific community, probably not. In the creation, there is, from the genealogies that are listed in Genesis, you can date that fairly accurately. Assuming that you know that, the begat actually meant his son.
Yeah.
I think in most, scholars would, Christian scholars or theologians would say, it's probably that dating is pretty accurate, but like I said, the dating is done through the scripture, and it's not done through outside sources.
Well, do evolutionists concur in the idea of a global cataclysm like a flood?
No, most evolutionists will say, there are regions of the earth that could have flooded at one point in time. And as we talked about in the previous program, I mean, that assumption, you can just look around the earth, and I don't care what part of the earth you're looking at, you can see evidence of a flood. Mm-hmm. So there was a global flood, like I said, it had dramatic changes for the surface of the earth changed dramatically after the flood.
And that thinking also substantiated by the social history of various cultures around the world who seem to ascribe to the notion that, yes, there was a flood. They have their own stories about it.
That's right. That's right. There's over 200, 200 cultures that list some type of flood and the people being saved through a boat or some type of structure, and came out the other side of the flood. And it's some of the stories are very, very close to what we have in Genesis. There's others that are not so close. There is a common thread of this flood, throughout various cultures around the world.
So Atzi appears to be post-flood, and his actual age is in question. But apparently the scientific work done with tissue is, now I'm assuming this, and this is kind of a question here, Dr. Don, working with actual tissue is more reliable in terms of findings than working with rocks in the age of the Earth, because carbon dating is more accurate than the radio dating we talked about previously?
Well, it's all relative, because carbon dating, like we said before, you can't use it for old, long ages. Mm-hmm. So if you're carbon dating in the thousands of years, you're probably pretty accurate. Whereas the other radioisotopes for dating rocks and stuff like that is going to be in the millions of years, and you could be off, tens or 100 millions of years, mm-hmm. depending on which rocks you're looking at and the variability there. But because of the other things that we discussed, previously, the acceleration, if indeed the as it appears that the radioisotopes decay accelerated in the past, then you can't really, that throws a monkey wrench in your dating.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're a biochemist. Would you rather be working with tissue or rock crystals?
Well, as a biochemist, I'd rather be working with tissue, mm-hmm. Hopefully living tissue. But if you had to date something, actual tissue you could probably say more about it than like I said, the rocks.
And I think the findings,
go ahead.
And I think the findings are more interesting too when you're dealing with people and animals and living things rather than rocks. I mean, it's all pertinent. It all goes together into God's big story, and one realm kind of reflects on the other. In other words, how man adapted to the conditions on the earth at the time. But I'm thinking that this study of Atzi from 1991 forward here is much more interesting than dating rocks from the beginning of time.
Yeah, that's right. And we're interested in man's history, and this is what we're looking at. We have a fellow that is very well preserved. It was like, finding a woolly mammoth in ice and in snow, and the woolly mammoth being perfectly preserved and finding, contents in its stomach and being able to analyze that. And here now we have a human mm-hmm. that is obviously not evolving. I mean, he's not ape-like. He's not an ape. He's not a, there's nothing unusual about his physical appearance. He's an average five and a half feet plus, tall man, and apparently intelligent, because he had shoes of bear skin and animal skin, and he stuffed it with some type of grass or vegetation in order for insulation. Like I said, he had different implements. He had a dagger. He had an axe. He was making arrowheads. So here's an intelligent fellow, far different from the ape man that we've been told existed prior in history.
And that's to me the key point in all this. And Dave, maybe you want to comment on this too. But now I look back at people. Let's assume for the moment he's 5,300 years old. And looking at that picture of him, and I don't know how accurate that reconstruction can be, but I'd like you could sit down and have a conversation with him. I mean, he's all there. He's human and has a lot to talk about.
Well, and I don't know if you noticed, but, Jim and Don, but the light bulb in my screen just went on.
I did.
Now, I know Don had to say it three or four times before it finally sunk in. And this was a guy who was smarter than I am. And he was much more capable. I'm not able to walk around by myself in the mountains and able to feed myself and clothe myself and create all these weapons and all this stuff for my outfit. I'm not up to that. I'm not even close to that. And you know, all of a sudden the light goes on and said, "Wait a minute. Yeah, we're going backwards." You're right, Don. We're de-evolving. We're becoming more reliant on technology to make sure that we can function from day to day to day. And you know, and I don't know, you know, who knows what that means for the future of the world. On a different topic, sort of, kind of, the story that triggered this whole discussion of Etsy from last week was that scientists are now going to be able to do whole genome sequencing techniques, which is something a relatively new technology, or new methods or new technologies. What other things are we going to be able to find out about it?
Well, I mean, we can, if you had other, you know, other samples, other humans in that vicinity or from a different community, you could pinpoint where he came from. Especially looking at his mitochondrial DNA, you can find out, okay, well, this fellow actually came from this village that might have been 200 miles away. I don't know. So you can kind of pinpoint, okay, this is the ethnic group that he came from. Here's, you know, this is kind of his social, you know, lifestyle, and this is what the folks did back then. If you look at it from just the things that he had with him, we already know that, okay, he was pre-Bronze Age, if you will, because his implements were copper. Copper is used in making bronze, but an amalgam of two different metals was stronger than the original either two metals. So they apparently hadn't discovered that, at least in his area, at least hadn't discovered. Well, you know, gee, if we melt these two metals together, copper and zinc, you make bronze, and that is stronger than either, you know, copper or zinc. Mm-hmm. So that you can get a little bit of an idea of, you know, how this guy kind of lived.
Well, I would suggest also that the clear eyes, the firm set jaw, the upright posture, the noble bearing, that he was probably a Republican.
Well, especially the long beard, you know.
Yeah,
puts it.
Well, and then they found in his billfold, they did find a membership card to the GOP. Yeah, that's true.
Well, the study continues. So
yeah, and you know, back on what you were just talking about, Don, he was, according to this article that I pulled on from the BBC, he was carrying a haplotype that showed his ancestors most likely migrated from the Middle East. And then there was something else earlier.
Yeah, but then didn't we all, I suppose?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess. Well, everybody started there eventually. And there was something else, about his genetic structure that suggested where he came from. I think it was...
Well, they've done analysis of pollen. Mm-hmm. That was found on parts of his body and in his intestines and so forth, and use that to help pinpoint location and culture as well. So,
yeah, and I think I read somewhere that there were some that suggested he came from maybe Corsica, or maybe southern Italy, partly because of these haplotypes, partly because of the pollen and food stuff that was left over in his stomach.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating study, and it's been a fascinating discussion. And Dr. Don, again, as always, thank you very much. Do you have any final thoughts on Otzi?
Well, you know, like I said before, I mean, we should look at these things and not, as Christians at least, not be alarmed and say, you know, oh my goodness, this disrupts everything that I know about Christianity. We should look at the facts, analyze them, and say, okay, how does this fit into our biblical understanding that we learn from God's Word? God is much more intelligent than any man, and our beliefs need to be based on biblical facts, mm-hmm. and then we interpret the world around us. And then when we do that, we can come up with some pretty interesting conclusions and use the information that, that science finds and say, wow, isn't this wonderful? This is a wonderful example of the creation story. Mm-hmm. And here is an intelligent being walking around with tools, and an unfortunate guy got shot with an arrow, so there was obviously wars, mm-hmm. or at least somebody might have been hunting and shot him. I mean, who knows what the story is, but obviously they were using these things for living.
Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating story, and Don, you've made it even more fascinating. Appreciate your thoughts and input today. My takeaway today is that we're devolving. That excites me. And all you have to do is look at what's happened to the History Channel over the last 2 years, and you can see. You know, we've gone from Roger Mudd in World War II to the Swamp People. So I think that's probably what's happening to us. Don, thank you so much. Have a blessed day, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again next Monday, okay?
Well, thank you, and I just want to mention again the Creation Moments website, creationmoments.com, where people can find a lot of different interesting information on our website.
And you can link to it right off of our website, which is brokenroadradio.com. Recommend a visit to Creation Moments. Don, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Don.
Thank
you, Jim.